We are excited to continue talking about nature and the outdoors, birds specifically, now on the Tuesday morning show. And we are excited. Sharon Stittler is otherwise known as the Bird Chick, and she just asked me a question on the Zoom. We'd like to see your face. I know that sounds silly. Sharon, Bird Chick, in her bio on her website, she says that she has successfully made her goal to get paid to go birding. Here are some of the things that she has done. She's a bird bander, field trip leader, bird field technician, park ranger, writer. She's written many books, including her most recent, 1001 Secrets Every Birder Should Know, Tips and Trivia for the Backyard and Beyond. The Bird Chick joins us now. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. I am so excited to be here because I listen to this program when I'm up north at the cabin or when I'm birding. So I'm just like, yay, I'm on it.
Well, I told John, I just dropped his name and you were in. You said yes.
I was all in. And I have to say, my boyfriend is very impressed that I'm on with John Latimer.
Well, and he's working on getting into Zoom. Maybe we won't see him.
Oh, my God. Time.
He loves technology. I don't know if you know that about John Latimer.
Well, maybe it might ruin the mystery for me if I actually see his face. I don't know.
That's right. It'll happen. But first, I just want to ask you a question.
Sure.
When did you fall in love with birds? Because I bet it was very early in your life.
It was. You know, I saw a Peterson Field Guide when I was 7 years old, and I snapped. And I mean, my mom had taught me the basics. Like, I grew up in Indiana, so the Northern Cardinal is the state bird, and she knew what a woodpecker was. We knew what crows were. So when I saw a page in this field guide that says that there was a bird that was a woodpecker that was the size of a crow, I was just fascinated. I was like, I can't imagine a woodpecker that big. I want to see it. And it just kind of went downhill from there, or uphill.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were kind of guessing, because we were talking earlier about the people who are passionate about birds. It's something happened early. Like you said, you snapped.
I did.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know some birders who got it late in life, like my friend Joey. She had a son that was into birding, and she didn't really know much about it. And so we all knew her as the birding mom who would drive her son to go see rarities around the state. Well, now that, you know, he's an adult working at Hawk Ridge, anytime there's a rare bird, she shows up and it's like, hey, Joey, thought you weren't a birder, but she loves those rare birds.
There is something about a rare bird. It flocks to us. Yes. Actually, my encounter with a rare bird was serendipitous. I was coming back from doing a program at, Heidi, congratulations.
We're working on technology here.
Jesus. I was coming back from doing a program at Crosby Schools, and I came to a T, and I could go left or right. It didn't make any difference to me. Both of them would get me home. And I'd always gone left and gone up a certain highway, and this time I went right, and I was driving along the Mississippi River sort of west of Aiken, and I came across like 40 cars, and
I gotta turn your volume down now. We're having fun.
You got muted.
Or just
try that.
All right, there we go.
Okay, so there were all these cars parked along the road, and I was immediately intrigued, and I stopped, and I got out, and I walked up to somebody who had, not in a bathtub, a lovely Swarovski spotting scope. I had my 8-power binoculars, and I said, what are we looking at? And he goes, right over there. It's a, and I've misplaced the bird, but it was only the second time this bird has ever been seen in Minnesota.
Oh, scissor-tail flycatcher?
No, this was a, I want to say it, not a roseate spoonbill, but a glossy ibis.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we've had some good rare birds. And I was trying to think, when you were first saying that, I was like, oh, I know this winter was a great gray owl.
Oh, this was a long time ago.
This was
10 or 15 years ago that this happened. But it just, it brought to mind how, you know, when a rare bird shows up, birders show up.
We do. And we spend a lot of money, too.
Well, part of the reason we wanted to talk to you today is that things are going on. Birds are kind of in transit. Things are changing around here. You had a tweet the other day about the blue jays you were seeing the numbers at Hawk Ridge. Let's start talking about blue jays a little bit and what's been going on.
Yeah, you might actually hear some, even though I have my windows closed. Our neighborhood is just inundated. But blue jays do migrate, even though we see them year-round here in Minnesota. Quite a few of them migrate, and their migration isn't well understood. But we know when the movements happen, because the counters at Hawk Ridge, they'll count anything else that they see going by in good numbers. And yeah, as of, I think, Friday, they had over 33,000 blue jays that had just crossed over Hawk Ridge, which is a crazy number. I can tell the difference of the blue jays in my neighborhood because blue jays will mimic. And so I have a blue jay in my neighborhood who in the summertime breeds here, and it can mimic a baby red-tailed hawk begging for food. But now I'm getting blue jays coming in that mimic broad-winged hawks. So they're, oh, you haven't been here this summer, so you're a new one. but they are moving through, and they will continue moving. You will have some blue jays, but if you're getting a little irritated by their raucous calls, it will calm down in the next couple of weeks.
I had a blue jay nest in a branch of a white spruce right outside my garage this year. This is the second time a blue jay has selected that spot, but separated by probably 25 years. So I got to watch her and her family grow. And one day back in July when it was in the 90s, I went out there with a mister because I just thought those poor little babies are just dying. And I sprayed them with mist. I just misted them. And it was dripping off the branches above the nest. And they were just turning their heads up and catching the drops as they came down. It was quite nice. I felt grandpa.
I've been curious about how this drought is going to have a long-term impact on the birds because, you know, just being... The cabin I go to is in Palisade in Aiken County, and I've been able to be up there without putting on bug spray, which is very abnormal. And we have a lot of birds that eat insects. And so I'm wondering if we're going to see the results of some poor nesting success this year, especially with things like tree swallows, barn swallows, cliff swallows, and chimney swifts, because the insects just aren't there.
Interesting. How will that be determined?
You know, it's a challenge because it's something that we'll see long term and over time. And places next spring, if biologists are able to go out and do breeding bird surveys, if they notice that certain species are down, that'll be a clue. I know a young woman who does boreal chickadee work up in northern Minnesota, and she was counting nests up there. And she said she started off with 11 nests, and I think 7 of them failed this year, where the chicks either didn't survive or the parents abandoned the nest. And that's something that the birds do if there's just not enough food. They kind of give up and live to fight another day. So I'll be curious to see if more biologists out there that were doing nesting research found that there wasn't as great nest success. And that's not something we'll see until winter.
Yeah, interesting. We had an event up here several years ago where the tree swallows came back early or came back on time, and then we had a late frost, and we lost a lot of tree swallows. But it seems like they have bounced back.
You know, birds can bounce back. The problem that they're having now is that they're having to deal with so many impactful weather events every year. You know, bluebirds this year were dealt a double whammy. You know, the deep freeze that happened down in Texas, a lot of bluebirds winter down there, and that killed off a lot of eastern bluebirds. So a lot of people this year didn't have bluebirds returning to their nest box. So if the few that did return still didn't have enough insects to raise young, it's going to take them even longer to recover that. And here's hoping that we don't have another insane weather event this winter that will affect birds on their migratory grounds.
Yeah. You said double whammy. What was the second thing that got the bluebirds? Because we had a late arrival of bluebirds, and we only had one nesting pair. And I'm not sure if they had young or not.
The double whammy, the second is the drought. Okay. That affects their ability to get insects. Yeah. Yeah. And it's even affected the berry crop on a lot of trees that they eat.
Yeah.
So it's been a rough year to be a bluebird.
Yeah, I've been throwing out millet in my yard for the white-throated sparrows, and normally this time of year they would start to turn toward the northern holly or the winterberry, and I counted the winterberry on my bush yesterday, and I had fewer than 20 berries on the whole bush, and that was the result of that May 28th frost that just wiped out the berry crop up here.
Yeah. It's gonna be a tough migratory and winter season for birds this year. You know, I think buckthorn appears to have done okay, but birds can't live on buckthorn alone.
Yeah. So what's going on with hummingbirds? I saw one yesterday. I know that this is the time of year when they are leaving the area. What's your opinion about the hummingbirds? How are they doing? And should we expect to see too many more?
Yeah, you know, hummingbirds through northern Minnesota, this is the time when they're clearing out. It is possible to see them through early October. I've seen a hummingbird in Duluth on October 1st in years past. So if you're worried about taking in your hummingbird feeders, don't worry about that. You're not going to prevent them from migrating. You might even help a few stragglers. But yeah, they're moving through and heading south. And if you're someone like me who really hates cleaning out hummingbird feeders and you'd like an alternative, I highly recommend cardinal flower.
Cardinal flower? Oh, the flower, cardinal flower. Yes, okay. Does it bloom this late?
Yes, it does. And it's a native plant, so it can take some of the crazy weather that we have here in Minnesota. It might need a little more moisture than some of your others, but yeah, it's still going strong, and it's a beautiful red plant.
It is gorgeous.
It's one of my favorites to see when I go kayaking.
We're talking with the bird chick this morning, Sharon Stidler, and she has her latest book out. She's written many. It's called 1001 Secrets Every Birder Should Know, Tips and Trivia for the Backyard and Beyond. Now, earlier this morning, John, you also talked about what's going on with loons and loon activities. Can you kind of tell us what we're seeing right now? I mean, they're starting to group together, right, and kind of go crazy.
Yeah, it's we call this staging when birds start gathering together on lakes, and so all the little family groups are going out to meet other loons and figuring out what it's like to live in different lakes after the lake they've been growing up on, and you know, this is also their chance to kind of show off and meet other loons that they might potentially mate with in future years. But yeah, Mille Lacs is a great place to watch for loons. I typically head there in October. You can get rafts of thousands of loons. Loons are also starting to transition into their winter plumage. You know, they're losing that dark green head and they get kind of a gray look before they head out to the Gulf Coast or to the Atlantic Coast to spend the winter. But yeah, it's a good time for waterfowl. Also, warblers and vireos are still moving through. So if you missed your warbler fix in the spring, there's still quite a few warblers to be had out there.
My dog picked up a wood warbler the other day. It fluttered it from the grass and kind of jumped up, and she grabbed it, and I was right there, and I said, "Drop it," and she opened her mouth, and out fell this slightly damp wood warbler, and I inspected it, and it seemed to be all right, and it could fly. Mm-hmm. And I just put it up in a shrub and told my dog that we were going to leave it, but it was fun to see that bird, and always fun to hear them singing in the summer.
Oh, yeah. And interesting, you know, you can get away with that with a dog. If your cat has grabbed a warbler and drops it, that warbler still needs medical attention because cat saliva will do in a bird within 24 to 48 hours.
But the saliva? Dogs, you know,
yeah, there's bacteria in their saliva if you've ever been bitten by a cat, you know, you tend to swell up quite a bit, and some people need antibiotics. And so, you know, when you're a much smaller bird, birds rarely survive a cat attack if they get away because of the resulting infection.
And that includes what, a puncture wound from the tooth? I mean, that just
puncture
putting that saliva
the
on the bird shouldn't hurt it. pardon me. My dog is a retriever, a lab, and she just gently handles things.
Oh, sure.
Unless it's a chipmunk.
No, yeah. And, you know, I have bird biologist friends who use dogs too, when they're doing woodcock research, and, you know, the dogs point on the woodcock nest so you can get at the babies and put the bands on them.
Yes. Always exciting to discover a woodcock nest. We found one this year for only the second time that I've ever stumbled across a woodcock nest.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. I've seen them nest in some crazy places, especially in Ohio. There was a woodcock that was nesting right in a parking lot at McGee Marsh.
Oh my God.
they had to put tape around it to make sure people wouldn't drive onto it.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah. I oftentimes talk to people about nest failures, and my point usually is that, you know what, it's probably an inexperienced mother and she'll only get better. You know, if a blue jay raids their nest, they'll only get better. They'll do better next time.
Yeah, it is funny with that, you know, especially when you talk to people about ducks and geese and how they'll sometimes they only have one chick. And I'm like, yeah, new mom, still the first brood is kind of a practice round.
Indeed.
Well, I'm sort of curious. I took a look at your blog. It's at birdchick.com. And one of the things I'm always interested in birders is their life lists. And when they get really excited, they've been waiting to see a certain bird. So for you, what's something that you may have seen you've been waiting for your whole life to see?
I have had two significant finds this summer. And the one that I have up right now on the blog is about a willow ptarmigan. It is the craziest sounding bird you will ever hear in your entire life. If you want, I can bring it up on my
phone.
Yes,
I was hoping you would actually do it, but she'll do it.
No, I don't do bird calls. My phone does them so much better. Also, I feel like when I do bird calls, people aren't laughing with me. They're laughing at me. But so this is the willow ptarmigan. Let's see.
Oh my gosh.
So that is the Alaska state bird. And I've always wanted to hear it. And I had the opportunity to work at Denali National Park for the summer. And I got in, spent the night in my cabin. Next morning I went out and they were all over the place and I got to hear them. So that's on there. But more importantly, pertaining to Minnesota, which is a story that's going to go up today or tomorrow, is I also got spruce grouse. Spruce grouse has been my nemesis bird in Minnesota since I started birding here. The number of times that I've gone to look for spruce grouse where a bird guide has said, I had clients there the last 3 days, I guarantee they'll be there. And I get there and I get something cool like a northern goshawk or a pine marten who has just scared all the grouse away. But I've never seen a spruce grouse and I finally got that this summer.
They are an amazing bird. I won't tell you the stories.
Well, it's okay to tell me the stories now. I've finally seen them.
Yeah.
But no, I was biking on this road and I didn't look. I've stopped looking for spruce grouse because if I go to look for them, they just don't show up. But I was biking down the park road and I went around a curve and there was a male displaying right there in the center. Two other males came in and I took video. There may have been some excitement swearing in the video, but I was just so, and it was so satisfying to really see that display and all the little flicks and stuff that they do with their tail. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Well, this time went way too fast. I hope we can do it again. So you can brag about talking to John Latimer more. Let's set up some more time to do that. That's the Bird Chick and Sharon Steitler.
Yes.
Okay, Steitler. You can find lots of information at birdchick.com, and we can't wait to talk to you again sometime soon.
My pleasure. This only makes me cooler to my boyfriend. So
thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you.